The Vietnam War, it's over. Your job just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Doctor, look!
Stand aside, nurse. I'm Dr. Homebrew.
Everybody, this is Dr. Homebrew.
Wow, was that the right moment to come in? It seemed like that guitar was just reaching crescendo. He just blatantly interrupted it.
I didn't hit my post, but it's fine. I thought about, like, I should have come in maybe like 5 seconds ago, and I didn't want to wait. And
I was enjoying getting to hear that little burst of, you know, flurry of, you know, for the 148th time or whatever.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm here for, Brian, is I'm here to reduce the amount of joy that you have in life. So I knew that would screw with you, and I did it.
I missed the old intro, Dr. Homebrew.
Man, I should find that because that was pretty good. But, you know, now with our crackdown on copyrighted music, we definitely can't play that.
We might refer to that as premature articulation.
Premature articulation.
Am I actually on that? Yeah, can we call that premature articulation?
Sure, if we can call what you just did premature vocalization.
Yeah,
mic on.
I mean, how many times have I done this show now? I mean, I'm kind of a baby podcaster at this point. You think I'd know how to press the damn button to make the mic work?
Mine was already on.
You're being verbal. Yeah, I got to do that. Anyway, welcome, everybody. We have a good show for you today, as always. And I'm going to say that because it's usually true. We have an IPA, and we have... Actually, we have two clone beers, I think. Right, Bri?
Yeah, it is. It's the clone beer show.
It's the Clone Wars. Don't sue me, Disney, but it's the Clone Wars.
Battle of the Clones.
We have a clone of Bell's Two Hearted, and then we have a clone of Leffe Blonde.
Yeah. It's the clone of the attacks. Here we go.
That's right. Misa, yeah. Dr. Homebrew.
That is I've never murdered anybody on the radio, but that's the best way to get me to do it. Taryn will do that friggin' Jar Jar Binks.
Oh, I hate Jar Jar so much.
I have to hold myself down from reaching back in the last week and firing one right across. Do that Jar Jar voice, dude.
We started watching Clone Wars with my daughter when she was like 6.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize there was Jar Jar in that. We get like a season deep, but I'm like, God damn it, there's Jar Jar. I was hoping to not introduce her to that until she was like 8 or 9, old enough to handle the truth of Jar Jar Binks.
Right, right, right.
Oh, God, that was so... Oh, I was so mad.
No, he's the worst, dude. He's the worst.
Absolutely.
Someone actually just told me, and it's... Well, he's never going to hear this, so I can say his name. George Bush told me... No, Taryn's cousin's boyfriend... Former roommate. No.
Yeah.
He told me the other day, he's like, because I went to the Star Wars land and in Disneyland a couple weekends ago. And it's no big deal. I don't want to make a big deal about it. And and he's like, we're talking about it. He goes, you know, I've never seen the Star Wars movies, like all of them, man. And I kind of just looked at him like he told me that he poured wet cement in my pockets. I don't understand. And he's like, well, I mean, that's not really true. Like, I haven't really seen him. And then I saw episode one, man. I liked it. I'm like, oh
why did you start with episode one?
I had to just leave the room because I didn't want to, like, make him hate me any more than he probably already does. It was pretty. It was pretty bad.
Yeah, Jar Jar was still annoying even when they kind of tried to tone him down. It was just.
You've got to walk away from that situation if it's somebody you might ever run into or want to have a relationship with. You can't get into it because there's no way to get into it other than that you're wrong in every possible way. Let me tell you why.
There's three things you should never talk about between family and friends. It's religion, politics, and whether or not the first three Star Wars movies are any good.
Right.
You can't.
The other worst thing, besides Jar Jar, almost bordering on Jar Jar, is just the clunky dialogue between two people that are supposed to be pretending like they're in love and liking each other. And it's just like,
oh God.
Oh my God. You know, Natalie Portman with the, what was that guy's name? Jeez.
Yeah, what's his name? Hayden Christensen.
Hayden Christensen.
And it's just like, oh, could there be any less chemistry in this at all? It's like, I don't know.
And my daughter's like seven. And we finished this movie and she's like, Anakin's really whiny. He's whinier than you are, and you're seven.
He's
supposed
dead.
To be a Padawan and some shit. You know, I don't know. It's just crazy.
Whatever. So that happened, and that was weird. And then Taryn and I, speaking of terrible movies, Taryn and I are watching all of the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies, right? Just to catch up into the pop culture of five years ago, apparently. And we just finished Ant-Man and the Wasp. Have you guys seen this?
I saw the preview. It looks
wreck. It's the sequel
to
Ant-Man.
Oh, my God. It looks so good. It is such an... I laughed my ass off the
Ant-Man
whole way
Ant-Man and
through.
The Wasp?
Yeah,
the
that's
sequel?
Such a great movie. Yeah, I love it.
All right, Brian's fired.
The preview looked okay.
Brian's fired.
I would give it a chance.
No, so, it's terrible. Talk about clunky dialogue and it's just... It was so bad. That was terrible. And then we were in the middle of watching Captain Marvel. That's terrible. Like, I'm just really disappointed, dude.
Okay.
Really? Yeah.
I think you have very high expectations for everything ever.
Especially this conversation that we're having.
Next on sci-fi, fantasy, and...
I don't know, man. It's just things that bother me. I didn't like it. But you know what I do like is five-star chemicals.
Me too.
I can stand behind that.
So you go to 5starchemicals.com and learn about everything you need to do to make great homebrew, which, of course, is cleaning and sanitizing. But don't let what I just told you prevent you from going to the actual website. You should still go to the website and check it out. There's a lot of good information. They have a lot more products other than just PBW and Star Sand. And all the products that we talk about here on the show, they're great people. They will be at HomebrewCon, I guarantee it. And so you go up and please thank them for supporting this show for so long, for every episode, I believe.
Yes.
I believe they've been our title sponsor for 147 episodes or whatever it is.
I still remember the day you called me and said, hey, you're unofficially... an officially sponsored podcast on the Brewing Network. We got Star Sand. Nice. I mean, you know, so we got 5 stars. Like, great.
That was nice of me.
It was cool.
That's cool.
For years, man, Star Sand, you clean first, get that Star Sand. Yep. You sanitize second with you clean first with PBW.
Yeah.
You sanitize second with the Star Sand. Right. I've been doing that for 20 years.
Then
you
take fire to it and sterilize.
Or if you're like me, I just buy my homebrew equipment new every time. I don't even clean
it. Well, yeah. Awesome.
Actually, I just cleaned my coffee pot out with PBW. Made a little solution, let it sit there for about 2 or 3 hours. Psh, perfect. Didn't have to scrub it or nothing, man. It worked.
My iced tea maker, man. I cleaned that thing out in time for the new season. It's amazing.
Body count.
Okay.
All right. I'll tell you what.
Is it time for
now
a break?
I get what you just said.
Thank you. Yeah, we're going to take a break. I still have to figure out how to...
I'm tired already from all this talking. Let's take a break.
We'll talk some more about the Ed Norton Hulk in the commercial break.
Did you like the Ed Norton Hulk, dude? Because
it's blew. It was terrible.
Okay,
you want bad movies?
I saw
that for free on a United flight from DC to SFO. Then I got upgraded. It was long story short. I watched that movie for free on an airplane, and it was still hot garbage. I like Ed Norton too, and I like the Hulk.
Yeah.
And that was awful. God, that was just like the bargain basement awful. It's still better than the Ang Lee first Hulk, which was even hotter garbage.
That was trash.
Oh, yeah. It was hot garbage in every way.
Yeah. Honest to God, don't remember a single part of that movie.
I remember the Hulk fighting an airplane. He's attached an F-15. He's punching an F-15 at 10 miles altitude. I'm like, what the fuck is this? And that was the climax. And I just, absolutely
not. Suspend your disbelief much? Yeah.
Hard pass.
All right, everybody, we're going to take a quick break here, and then we're going to come back and we're going to start drinking some beers and talking to homebrewers and all that kind of fun stuff. This is Dr. Homebrew. Hang on. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Back to the examination.
All right. Thanks for hanging out, everybody.
Nice entry.
Thanks, man. I'm working on it. I do it for a living.
That was better. Much better.
Appreciate it.
I'd like to also point out that JP's shirt says Meowdy Perdner.
Meowdy Perdner.
Cat.
It's my favorite shirt right now.
A cowboy
it's
hat
a pretty awesome
and a bandana
shirt
around his neck. Orange furry cat.
It's like your, looks like your right. least racist shirt.
That's right. All right, everybody. We have Brandon on the line. Brandon, are you there?
I am here.
What's up, dude? Hey, let me turn this music off. Hold on. I don't know why it's still playing. It's very peaceful. I was like, wow, Brandon has his own...
makes an appearance again.
His own theme music. thanks for joining us, man. I know it's a little bit late, but we're about to bust open your beer. It's a Bell's Two Hearted clone. Am I right?
Yes, sir.
All right.
All right.
Have you done this one before?
No, this is the first time.
First time.
Just actually tasted some of the bottled version tonight while I was waiting on you guys to call. But I've been drinking my keg out of the keg for the past couple of weeks.
That's weird. You don't sound like it at all.
So where are you calling us from?
Bev, actually, can you give us just three glasses, please? Thanks very much.
Calling from Colorado, Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania, all right.
We chatted with Brandon
there, dude.
Before.
Nice.
PA, man.
All right. Well, since we got all that taken care of, I have one can. You were nice enough, by the way, to send cans of Two Hearted, which we don't get out here. And I know that people like really fall over that beer. I think I've had it like maybe once, but it's an IPA and I don't really drink it, but I know it was very special to send, so I really appreciate that. I saved my can. Mm-hmm. I gave the boys their cans. I saved mine and we're going to drink it here tonight, which is why I'm calling for more glasses. So, Brian?
It's fun to do the side-by-side for sure.
Yeah, it was cool, man. I appreciate that. You definitely didn't have to do that, but it was very nice of you.
All right,
Brian, yeah, take us through this beer here. Huh?
So, yeah, as you heard, it has a nice little hiss when we opened it up. Actually, when I opened the bottle that I judged previously, it was kind of creeping up in the neck a little bit, which can sometimes be an indication that something may be getting away in the bottle, but I don't know that was the case. It might just be kind of highly carbonated or and kind of nucleating on something in the bottle, maybe. I don't know. But anyway, in the nose, I can get a low... kind of honey-like malt aroma, and an initial blast of a kind of a perfumey hop drops away, revealing kind of a citrusy classic U.S. hop profile, but it's light. Moderate fruity esters, no DMS or diacetyl. It smells pretty cleanly fermented, right in the territory, but not screaming super, super hoppy IPA, although, you know, there has been some style creep on the IPA style. I'd say this is definitely leaning more towards the classic end, the 90s IPA territory. Although when we get into the flavor, we'll talk about bitterness and stuff too, that has also changed over the years. So I gave it an 8 out of 12 for aroma. I thought it was pretty nice. Appearance-wise, it's a pretty deep gold color, excellent clarity. The head is a nice creamy eggshell off-white colored stand, very fine bubbles, persists very well. And so, I mean, I had to give it full points for appearance. It was a really nice looking beer. Flavor-wise, the malt is medium-low, I would say. A little bit honey-like, slightly caramelly. Mm-hmm. The hops are medium-low and mostly citrusy, classic U.S.-style IPA hops. Medium-low bitterness, pretty much out of the way, which is nice in a way. Some of those older versions of IPAs were harsher, and the guidelines have shifted somewhat, even from 2008 to 2015, to reflect changes in tastes with IPAs, and it's swung even further this way. But to me, this one is one that didn't, it's
maybe the one of the reasons that it's a classic IPA is that it's not so insanely like minerally bitter, harsh, biting beer. And I'll taste a little bit of the, if I don't mind if I do here, of the bells.
Some of the bells, yeah.
And I'll talk about the differences here in a little while. Yeah, it has a semi-dry finish. Seems cleanly fermented and a lightly fruity ale. The balance is almost even between the malt and the hops, so I would like a little more hops there to kind of pop out over the top of that malt, although both are nice. Mouthfeel-wise, it's medium-light-bodied, no astringency, very smooth. Medium carbonation, and it is somewhat creamy. No astringency evident, and no real warmth going on here either. It seems like maybe on the lighter side, strength-wise, for the IPA, I'm not getting a big, like, wow, there's a bunch of alcohol there. Overall, it's just a pleasant, cleanly brewed American IPA with a lot of great attributes, and mostly to style for the kind of classic version of the U.S. IPA. Will, you know, maybe albeit with a little bit lower bitterness than it was in the 90s. So, but I just would like maybe a little more late hop to stand up to the pretty substantial malt that's there. And this may also be a bit aged, and Brandon's tasted it since the beginning there, so we'll trust his notes on what it tasted like 2 months ago or whenever it first was hitting its prime, and he decided to bottle it and send it in to us and let us sit on it and JP to put it in on his front porch warm. And
that's right.
No,
that's all I do.
I doubt he did that, but no, really nice job on
what
this
mean,
beer.
I doubt he did that, as if there's some hesitation in that.
I doubt it. I just like to give people the benefit of the doubt. I'm from Minnesota, dude. It's
jeez.
It's what I. It's
I'm glad
Minnesota
you sit
nice.
In traffic to come here. How about that?
So yeah, thanks for sharing the beer. I gave it a 35. I thought it was kind of a nice, a very good IPA towards the high end, a very good, bordering on excellent. Exemplifies the style fairly well, generally within the parameters of American IPA.
Yeah. All right, Mr. Char.
Yes. So largely, yes. I. these things aren't that funny that I'm sitting here looking at you, and they're fucking hilarious.
Yeah, well.
So don't worry. That's why that's why it's a show, and it's why we're together.
That's right.
I largely concur with Brian. This is a really nice beer. Aroma is definitely hop focused. I get pine, citrus / orange. The citrus is definitely like an orange peel citrus from a hop aroma. I get like a really light cardboard type oxidation in the aroma that I'll come back to in the flavor. The Two Hearted has a very similar aroma character. I get a little caramel malt in this. And in the Two Hearted, I get almost like a candy-like aroma to it, which is interesting. I judged this at home with the can and with the bottle, and they were a lot closer than these two right now. And I don't know, it's just a difference between maybe timing or temperature or what. But
sobriety.
Sobriety. I'm actually really sober right now. It's really sober this second. Like Brian was saying, this is a classic throwback IPA aroma. I guess what you'd call a throwback IPA, looking back the 90s type recipes with more caramel and more malt.
Yeah.
9 out of 12 for aroma. Appearance, 3 out of 3. It's clearer than the Two Hearted. So
it is.
This is a brilliantly clear beer, so congratulations on kicking Bell's ass in terms of clarity. I wish they could have gotten theirs a little bit clearer.
It should be noted that a little hop haze is allowable in an American IPA.
Oh, certainly. I'm having fun on the air, Brian.
But I like the clarity, too. Don't get me wrong.
When you're giving someone a diagnosis, you have to intersperse that with some levity, because you never know what they might be hearing from you as a homebrew professional.
That's true.
It's the side to side. The Two Hearted is maybe a little more orange than your beer, but your beer really looks more like a classic IPA. Again, I mean, orange is not typically a color you associate with IPA, and the orange character of this is really kind of interesting. Of the Two Hearted is interesting to me. Then the head is the big difference. The head is lower, but it's still. There's still head, and it's still persistent, 3 out of 3. Flavor. The oxidation aroma that I got, I didn't get in the flavor at all, which tells me maybe it's something associated with the hops. Maybe it's a papery character that is somehow something that one of the hops might be expressing, and not the malt. So I didn't get the papery cardboard flavor one bit. Starts off malts at a medium level. The beer is crisp and clean. There's low caramel. Bitterness rises up to kind of a high level mid palate. Hop flavor is medium, citrus orange, like in the aroma. Finish is long and balanced. It's well attenuated. It's interesting, the pine that was present in the aroma isn't present in the flavor, really. Still really pleasant, 15 out of 20. Mouthfeel, I think give it 3 out of 5, because the body's medium. Carbonation was really low, I think less than the two-hearted. And I think it explains the difference in the head, because there's probably half the carbonation in this beer as is in that can of two-hearted. There's noticeably less hiss when I judge this at home. The hiss, you'll get a hiss from a can, but the carbonation sound you got from the can was markedly more from the two-hearted than from the bottle for this beer that we're judging. There's no warming. It's creamy rather than perky. No astringency. And 3 out of 5. Overall impression, I gave an 8. I think it's really close to two-hearted in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And in some ways, it's better, like with the clarity. I think that maybe backing off the caramel malt by maybe a 25-30% might help you match it a little bit more. And then I'm curious to discuss with Brian and Jason and everyone kind of this, what I pick up is kind of like a candy-like flavor and aroma in the two-hearted, and if that might be a hop character or some sort of malt or what. But well done. I gave this a 38 out of 50.
Excellent.
Nice.
All right, Brandon, what do you think, man? How did everyone do?
Yeah, I mean, that sounds good to me. I actually just cracked open my first bottle of this that I bottled, you know, same time I sent out to you guys, you know, tonight here, just waiting on the show, and noticed, you know, I also had obviously the keg version still on, and just completely different beers to me. The bottle version is it just has that that out of date, you know, sat in the shelf too long IPA character,
oh,
you know, of the 90s. I mean, it to me, like I can't believe, I'm a little surprised that you guys aren't talking about that a little more, because it's really pronounced to me, that caramely sweetness.
I got kind of like a honey like
or whatever,
little caramel. Yeah.
Yeah, like it's just, I mean, it's not bad. It doesn't make the beer bad. It just, it's like kind of that same thing you get with like all the Belgian beers that you kind of get in the States. If you're, you know, like they're just like they've been, you know, they've been warm or just in the bottle.
I wonder if the transport has changed it even from what you're tasting, Brendan, to, you know, to what we're tasting. I don't get a whole lot of caramely sweet kind of thing, but there is that creaminess. And there is a kind of a honey-like thing, so maybe that's what it's sort of changed into in the couple of days since it's been out of refrigeration. It's been really hot out here lately, so maybe it's kind of just morphed into something different than what you're experiencing. But is your version kind of have a creamier mouthfeel?
It does drinking? A little bit, yes. Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And it actually has, the bottle that I poured has just a slight, like, you know, kind of hot taste to it compared to what I poured out of the keg. But even just a slightly darker color as well, almost unnoticeable. Like I think if the haze wasn't there, you might not even notice the color difference. But it seems like the bottle beer is a little hazier. Mm-hmm. But it does also have a little bit better head retention. It's got a little bit of lacing on the glass, whereas the one that I'm pouring out of the keg.
Yeah. What did this one come out alcohol wise? I know that the Two Hearted is a 7%er. It's up there for, you know, in the higher end of the IPA style.
Did you is a 6.43 is what I calculated. Yeah. Do you guys want me to just go down through the recipe? And
yes, please.
Sure. Yeah. It does taste a bit lighter, I would say. Yeah, yeah.
Let's do that.
Yeah. So OG is 1058, final gravity 1.009, 6.43 on the alcohol, and Rager formula is at 82 IBUs. The malt bill is 74% Breeze 2-Row Pale, 22% Breeze Pale Ale, 4% Breeze Crystal 40. That was fly sparged at 150 for 1 hour with water built from RO on a 2-to-1 sulfate to chloride, about 110 to 50 parts per million. The hop bill is all Centennial. This recipe is actually from the Bell's homebrew store, and I bought the Centennial from them as well, which apparently they take from their production Centennial hops. So that was 5 ounces or 50 IBUs at 45 minutes, another 5 ounces and 30 IBUs at 30 minutes, and then I put 28 ounces in the dry hop, and that is a 20-gallon batch.
Wow.
Then the yeast is the Imperial Flagship Cow Ale. It was 3 packs of that and a 1-liter starter. And what I did with this starter, which I usually don't do, in a 5-liter flask, I put 3 packs in there, filled the flask with oxygen, and then put it on a stir plate and let it go the whole brew day, and then just pitch the 1 liter in, you know, at the end of the day.
And that took off nicely.
I imagine. it was about a 6-day ferment. I was, you know, from 1058 down to 1012 at 6 days. And I was there for like 2.5 days at 1012. I dropped out all the yeast I could, and then dry hopped. And over the next, I dry hopped for 5 days, and every day, like morning before I went to work and evening when I come home, I would bubble CO2 through the bottom port of the conical just to rouse everything, keep those hops moving around. Mm-hmm. And over those 5 days, it dropped from 1012 to 1.009.
It is nice and dry, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I was kind of surprised, you know. I thought I was having diacetyl issues and kind of then happened onto this hop creep issue I've been hearing about. Mm-hmm. I thought it was interesting that this dropped another 3 degrees after dry hopping.
Yeah.
Well, that can be for a number of reasons, and yeah, there's a lot of yeast that's left in your beer even after you drop what you think is all your yeast. And whether that's the hop creep people are talking about or the additional oxygenation from adding hops, inevitably you get some oxygen in or what. Yeah, I don't think it's that unusual to drop a little gravity after dry hopping.
And just kind of stirring things up, kicking things up by rousing those hops, kind of pushing them around in the fermenter, you know, that can help drive a little fermentation too.
It's just rousing it got me another 3 degrees.
It seems amazing, but that's what happened.
And it's a nucleation site for carbon dioxide too, right? Because carbon dioxide is toxic to yeast. So if you give the carbon dioxide something to nucleate on, and then it kind of starts to get out of solution, I think that's part of the puzzle too. But it is really interesting.
Yeah,
I want to briefly talk too about some of the differences I picked up, because I just kind of talked about the beer, but then I tasted later. You know, afterwards I tasted the Two-Hearted Ale out of the can. I'll just briefly go through it. You know, same temperature. I took them both out of the fridge at the same time. Let them sit for a little while. The Two-Hearted Ale poured a little frothier looking head. Actually, yours was a little finer, but it was likewise long lasting. Came out perfumey again, hints of earthiness in the hops, and a little less honey-like, more, I would say, biscuity and bready. The color was a little slight bit darker, maybe, slight haze, which, again, was surprising. And the flavor, I think, you know, the hops went out just a little bit more in the Two-Hearted Ale, the actual Two-Hearted Ale, but not by much. It's still not like a super like hop monster. It's a more classic IPA, and they're over the top of the malt for sure, but not crazy. The bitterness was roughly the same. Nice job. Medium, low, out of the way. You really nailed the smoothness and the mouthfeel. Both beers do have that. Although I'd say the Bell seems maybe just a bit more minerally, a little bit more sulfate maybe.
Oh yeah, for sure.
They might have burtonized their water a little more than yours perhaps. But it's still really good.
It's harder water, I think.
You know, nice body, nice creaminess, and no harshness or astringency in both beers. So, you know, your homebrewed version is a little bit maltier for sure. The dryness level is very, very similar, I would say. Maybe yours is a little touch drier, and the Bell's has maybe a hint more alcohol, but they're both clean, no obvious defects, and well-brewed. So, you know, nice job. It's just a bit faded. I'd like to taste the fresher version, and sorry we can't be there with you drinking it out of your keg, but there you go.
Yeah, and it's interesting to hear you talk about the age of this and listening to your malt bill, because I had thought there's going to be a more like caramel malt in here. Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting point that oxidation doesn't have to just be that cardboard papery mm-hmm. flavor. Oxidation can be this kind of caramel note. And like you're saying, yeah, this is kind of characteristic of the 90s vintage IPAs that sat on the shelf for a long time,
yeah.
is they wouldn't necessarily get papery, but they would get more caramel.
Mm-hmm.
So my notes and my discussion about caramel in here really, I think, go more toward what we were talking about before. I mean, there's a little bit of papery oxidation in the nose, which I'm thinking maybe is related to the overall caramel level.
There may be, too, that a lot of them in the day were bottle conditioned, you know, and it yes. was, you might not get that same, like, that transuminal and all papery, rather than just it oxidizes the malt a little bit that's in there.
Right.
And there you go, you know, and the yeast scavenges right. a little bit of it and keeps it kind of more even. But
yeah, makes sense.
Could it get.
Yeah, I'm definitely with you on the sweetness, because it's just not there in the keg version. Like it's literally a totally different beer.
Couldn't it,
I mean, very very similar flavors, but that just completely changes it. Mm-hmm. That like extra sweetness. Like
Well, we enjoyed it. So, but yeah, thank you for sharing it. And I'm sure it was a little higher scoring earlier.
Can you get that that sort of creaminess that we're seeing in the bottle version from any sort of oxidation of maybe those caramel notes or age?
Does
your keg version?
I don't really get a creaminess to it in either version. I mean, I
really.
It's a
smoothness.
I don't know. When you say creamy, I kind of think of like the more like if you have like a diacetyl or something where it's a little slick on your palate or your tongue.
Definitely not that.
Maybe
it's
I'm not falling.
Maybe it's soft. Maybe the soft water versus the hard water of the bells.
When I think of creamy, you think of like a nitrogenated milk stout. It's just like
that's definitely
so
not. That's what I'm talking. Yeah,
feeling
not
on
that.
Your.
But
you know,
but
like,
there is a. I mean, there's a slickness, but it's not. It's not a diacetyl at all. But maybe it is water. Differences between the two.
I think the way you treated your water, was really nice.
I am pretty low in the mineral content. Like I said, I'm only like 110 parts per million sulfate.
Mm-hmm. No, I think whatever you did to your water was great, because my pet peeve of homebrew these days is over mineralization.
Yeah,
and so many beers are like you're licking a rock, and I don't want to lick a rock. I want to drink a beer. And I think that's...
I want to lick Iraq.
I don't want to do that either. That sounds disgusting and maybe a little sandy. But no, I think that your water was just fine. Well done with that.
Excellent. All right. Well, Brandon, do you have anything else to ask the guys?
No, not on this one. That's it. I appreciate your feedback, guys.
Brew this one again and drink it younger, share it around and enter it. It's good, and I keep it going. Maybe use some of the feedback and send it back again, and we'll try to judge it fresher and have you send it right before the show, so we're getting like the freshest one. You just hitting its prime, and it's probably a 40-pointer then.
Yeah. Hey, Brandon, are you in a homebrew club?
No, I am not. Just on this all on my own.
Good. Those guys are weird, dude. Stay away from Are you going to HomebrewCon?
No, I wish I could. I just don't have the time right now. I got one on the way here in
good.
October. So
stay away from Homebrew.
You know about that, right?
Yeah.
Take your chances, though, to make your escapes now. Like, you have a built-in designated driver, and she probably sleeps a lot. You can get out and, like, you know, sow your wild oats without actually sowing any wild oats. Just, you know, get out for a beer every once in a while, because you're not going to get as many in another few months here, buddy. Now you have homebrew, though, so you're good.
Yeah. All right, Brandon, we'll let you split, man. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks, man.
Bye-bye.
He's like, well, I don't know what's going on, dude.
All right, that's good stuff, huh?
Yeah. It's good. Yeah. Good beer. Good shot.
And we got Bell's Too Hearted, which, like I said, I mean, you know.
I don't get that every day out here.
You don't, and it's like, I don't know, it's just a 90s IPA.
I'm going to be in the Midwest in a few days, and I'll be drinking some of that, I'm sure, if I can find it.
I don't really understand the hype, but, you know, that's just me. All right, this is Dr. Homebrew. We'll be right back with another clone beer. Of a Leffe or Leff? How do you pronounce it?
I call it Leff, but I might be wrong.
Which is
Leffe.
Like a Belgian golden strong or something like that? What is it, Brian?
Hey Siri, how do you pronounce
that? Okay, good job.
It's a Belgian blonde ale.
Hang on, we'll be right back.
Hello, fellow BNers. This is Sully from the 21st Amendment Brewery located in San Francisco, just two blocks from Giants Park. Before Nico and I opened the 21A and before I was a professional brewer, I homebrewed on my small four-burner apartment stove in a back house in Santa Monica, California, making my extract brews before graduating to the daunting idea of all-grain brewing. Homebrew books and information was hard to come by back then. The internet hadn't been invented yet, along with other things we take for granted today, like electricity and potable water. One thing I wish I had back then when I was learning was a radio show that could teach me the ins and outs of brewing and answer questions that I had about homebrewing, a resource for making great craft beer. The 21st Amendment Brewery is excited to be a proud sponsor of Dr. Homebrew, a great show that teaches you what you need to know about making incredible beer. Good stuff. Listen up, you might learn something. I certainly did. And thanks for your support. Tasty Crack Games.
The leader in affordable, high-quality kegerators is here. Introducing Komos, the kegerator designed with serious beer drinkers in mind. It features an all-stainless steel draft tower, a major upgrade over traditional chrome-plated brass towers, and Komos keeps your new tower cold with their air-cooled tower fan, wrapping your beer lines in frigid coolness. Your beer is poured from innovative forward-sealing faucets that don't leak, so they stay cleaner for longer. Dual gas inlets on the rear of the fridge allow you to run both CO2 and nitrogen gas. Serve your beer with CO2, serve your kegged wine, or even cocktails with nitrogen. The digital temperature display has the largest range available, allowing you to use the Komos kegerator for fermentation if you need to. And now Komos kegerators ship with duo-tight draft fittings for that click-to-connect assembly we've all dreamed of. Buy direct from KomosDraft.com and receive free shipping on your order. That's KomosDraft.com.
I'm sorry to tell you this, but we're going to have to pour you out.
Back to Dr. Homebrew.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Thanks for hanging on. We're going to get Jason on the line with a Leff clone. Actually, he should be here. Jason, are you there?
Hey.
Hey, what's going on, Jason. Dude?
Just chilling.
Hell yeah, bro.
Thanks for staying up for us. We're later than we doing? Said we were going to be, but
yeah, not
we're
too
here.
Bad, man. So did you know it's Leff, or do you call it Leffe, like these people who don't know anything?
Some people call it Leffa.
I call it Leffe because I'm a dumbass.
Well, with a name like that, you have to be, right?
The Wikipedia page says Leff. I don't know.
But I did learn it is Leff, so yeah. I'm all good now.
I'm all good now.
Let's
everybody.
Just call it Leffer for today. Why not?
There you go.
Jason, where are you calling us from?
Brandon, Mississippi.
Wow. Where is that, like Gulf Coast or what?
That's right outside of Jackson.
Okay. Are you in a homebrew club?
I'm a lone wolf, Charles. That's... I would be what you call a lone wolf.
Two in a row. I used to live near Jackson, Tennessee when I was a kid, which is not Jackson, Mississippi, but it's probably only about 200 miles away.
It sounds the same, and so that's all you need.
Named after the same president.
Yeah.
Jackson.
How long you been homebrewing, dude?
Man, almost 2 years.
Really? And you're tackling the big dogs, huh, already? The Leff and Belgians like that? Do you drink a lot of Belgians?
Not really. I've managed to brew almost 30 in 2 years.
Wow.
Cool. Wow.
So, yeah, I've been hard at it.
Doing a lot of variety or just sticking to some styles and branching out once in a while? What do you do?
I kind of go after everything, but I do love the Belgians. I'm going to actually tackle a Westy 12 clone this weekend.
Oh, wow. Oh, damn. Yeah, that's the holy grail of homebrewing right there, dude.
Going to give it a shot.
Do a lot of these.
How available is Belgian beer at the store in Mississippi, out of curiosity? I mean, Jackson's a pretty big city, so I think maybe you'd have some pretty good availability.
No, actually, the left built this beer that I've got, a buddy of mine brought me a six-pack from down on the coast. So okay. It's hard to get here. So
interesting.
That's one reason I don't brew.
Okay.
Yeah, well, it makes sense, man.
Very cool.
All right, Char. You want to kick us off on Jason's beer here, dude?
Let me kick this off right here. Right. So Aroma, I thought aroma was very low overall, which is okay, consistent with style. Low malt, low earthy hop. Have to kind of struggle to pick it out. And my sort of comment that runs through this whole score sheet, I think more carbonation would have improved the aroma, would have sort of lifted some of that out of the beer. And I'm kind of going to have 2 seconds of dead air here. We cracked a new bottle of this as opposed to the one we judged an hour or so ago. I think this is more carbonation than the previous bottle, but not by much. So I think this is kind of my running thing. Is the only thing really wrong with this beer, in a nutshell, is low carbonation. More carbonation would have improved everything. No diacetyl, no off aromas. Give it 7 out of 12 for aroma. Appearance, this beer is brilliantly clear. Color is golden. Head is very, very low but persistent. Gave it a 2 out of 3. This is a style of beer that really does call for like a big, creamy, long-lasting head that just isn't quite present here. Flavor is great. You know, initially the flavor is malty with some fruity esters that are the classic Belgian character right on the heels, the kind of plum, banana, stone fruit that you expect from any of the Belgian yeasts. You know, the Belgian yeast selection is always kind of funny because there's so many you can get, and they do provide a slightly different balance in each one. But at the end of the day, they're all, I mean, to me, they're all kind of largely the same with a few exceptions.
Yeah.
And it just kind of depends on what your personal preference is. And so the profiles are a little different, and it just kind of becomes which one you're comfortable working with, which one fits what you like to drink. Balances to malt, which you would expect in this beer. Low hop bitterness rises to medium in mid palate. Finish is balanced, and it tilts really very, very slightly to bitter. It is a really balanced finish, and it's very well attenuated. Gave it 13 out of 20 for flavor. Really liked the flavor of this beer. Mouthfeel, 3 out of 5. Body's medium. Carbonation is very low. The sample we judged earlier, I would have said, was flat. Mm. This one is maybe more almost flat. But I suspect it's a common thread throughout all the bottles that you've and I'm curious if you've bottled this whole run or keg. We'll talk about that later. Really, any more carbonation would perk up this beer. And that's the if there's anything wrong with this beer, that you could take this up 10 points, 12 points instantly by like tripling the carbonation in here. There's a slight warming, which is exactly what you'd expect from a Belgian blonde. This should be this is in the strong Belgian category. This should be a 7% plus beer. This definitely ticks that mark. Definitely, I think of this more creamy than perky because of the lack of carbonation. No astringency, 3 out of 5. Overall impression, flavor of this beer is great. You know, like I said, the common thread is just the lack of carbonation here, which unfortunately I think kind of knocks points off in multiple categories.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
But so overall, I give this 5 out of 10 for a total of 31, which is still in the very good category. I think this could be a high 30s, even 41, 42-point beer if this were properly carbonated. Mm. So good job, Jason. I liked it. And, you know, there's so many of these beers we get on the show that have, you know, 2, 3, 4 major flaws to fix. And this one is relatively simple, and it might even be as simple as how you bottle off your keg. And again, we'll discuss that later on after Brian has had a chance to judge.
All right, Brian.
As usual, I completely disagree with Brian. Full of carbonation.
How dare you? I'm going to start sending my referrals to my other doctors' homebrew, other hospitals.
Oh, I give you champagne. I'm sorry, dude.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry, man.
Oh, this.
Yeah, that one.
This glass. Yeah.
Yeah.
So in the nose, I'm getting a pleasant, lightly peppery phenol.
Also, we're drinking champagne and Char's not.
Barefoot champagne
with some smooth low alcohol up front. Some fruity esters are medium high. Had kind of a I got it as a yellow grape kind of aroma, a greenish yellow grape note with a hint of tangerine, some nice fruitiness in there. I really liked that. Low grainy, smooth malt, only a hint of sweetness in the nose. Didn't get any DMS or diacetyl. It seemed pretty cleanly fermented. Appearance-wise, it's a medium deep gold color. Had a fairly low head of fine white bubbles. Actually had some nice Belgian lacing on the edges of the glass. The beer is quite clear with an orangey-yellow highlights. Kind of look through it, and it's a really pretty, pretty beer. There's a little tiny touch of haze. It's not completely clear, but had good head retention. I actually gave it full marks for color. I think it looked fine there. I should have knocked it down a point for not having the big fluffy head, but the retention was pretty decent nonetheless. Even though it started low, it just stays low and just hangs there. So I think there's maybe a little more carbonation here than Mr. Char is suggesting, but it's not like, wow, that's an intensely carbonated beer.
That's why you get a second opinion.
Mm-hmm. Flavor-wise, it's got a nice pleasant maltiness, very light spiciness, white pepper. And the flavor, it started getting overpowered a little bit with this orangey ester coming out on top. Nice kind of a citrus fruit punch-like character. And we're talking about that after we both judged it. I thought maybe it was just like a little too sweet and not attenuated enough. I'd like to hear where you finished at. But Brian was suggesting that it could be, the lower carbonation that's here that's making it seem a little sweeter with all the fruitiness that's going on from your esters giving the impression of sweetness. And I'm open to that theory. So we'll find out where the final gravity landed, and I'll say, oh, yes, I was wrong, Brian, and give me 30 lashes now, whatever. That's kind of a fruity, sweet aftertaste. It is, no, I'm not getting any DMS or diacetyl. It is pretty clean, cleanly fermented, Belgian-style fermentation. Pretty light, smooth alcohols throughout. Has a lot of what you want in a nice Belgian blonde ale. So mouthfeel wise, I would say yes. It's lower carbonation, kind of medium low to me. Carbonation wise, not the lowest, most flat beer you've ever had. There's some bubbles.
Low this smooth is the alcohol most warmth. Flat beer I've ever had.
There are bubbles. Low smooth alcohol warmth. No astringency. It's nice and smooth as far as that goes. Medium bodied, bordering on, almost medium full to me. And it's a bit big, maybe not. Not way out of style or anything, but it might be the impression from low carbonation or maybe lack of attenuation. But still pretty smooth beer. Overall, just I found, Brian liked the flavor a little more than the aroma, I think. I actually liked I thought the aroma was really inviting. Once I got into the flavor, it was just a little too, maybe a little too sweet and a little too, or at least the impression of sweetness, and a little too big on the fruitiness as opposed to other elements of the beer. Some alcohol shining through with the pepperiness. The phenols were really subtle. The fruitiness should be fairly subtle in this. It's overpowering a lot of the other pleasant aspects of the beer that are there. So maybe use a little more attenuative yeast, a bigger pitch, more nutrients to keep the yeast happy. This will apply to your Westy 12 clone too. Just keep that yeast going strong, and perhaps work with your temperature to ramp it up, or add sugars. Slowly feeding it to keep it going. But do some different, read about some different tricks you can do to keep your yeast happier for longer, and start with as much as you can. We'll talk about yeast pitch and all that stuff too. But that's kind of the classic advice for getting your beer to attenuate better. Just your yeast has to be really, not only a lot of it has to be, vital, fresh, vigorous, and ready to go, ready to rock and roll.
Like again, Mr. Cooper himself.
Yeah, it's a fairly smooth beer, so I'm not anticipating like there's a big problem with what you pitched. It's just, subtle sweetness that left on the end there. So I gave it a 33. I actually like the beer a fair amount. It's a very good beer.
That's a very good category, right?
Yeah.
All right, Jason, what do you think, man? How'd they do?
I think that's right on. I really do.
Yeah, thank you.
I really do.
Excellent.
Did you enjoy the beer yourself?
Yeah, I had lots of friends that enjoyed it.
It's good.
I think Cooper hit it with the sweet. It's a little bit on the sweeter side. With the 530 yeast, the WLP 530, it didn't quite. I didn't account for blow off, so I lost a lot of yeast. It finished at 118 instead of 110. Yeah. I don't know if that makes a big difference.
It will. It should be a lot drier. Yeah.
What was your starting gravity?
167.
Yeah, 1018 is a pretty high finishing gravity. So yeah, Brian wins the battle of the consultations
sometimes
on this one.
Yeah, sometimes I.
What should it be? Four, well, even 12, 14?
I mean, well, again, but I would say that's the thing too, about though. Carbonation is that even with a higher than expected final gravity, the carbonic acid bite will balance that to some extent. It's not going to cover up that sort of under attenuation, but it'll mask it enough to raise you a few points in competition.
Definitely changes the impression. Yeah.
Jason, do you have the recipe for this guy? You want to fire that off?
Yeah. So for this, this is a recipe I got off of the internet, Homebrew Talk. So it's 12 pounds, 8 ounces of Pilsner, Belgian Pilsner malt, 1 pound and 4 ounces of Munich malt, 6.8 ounces of biscuit malt, 4.4 ounces of melanoidin malt. And for the hops, I had a ounce and a half of Styrian Goldings at 60 minutes, 0.85 ounces at size at 30 minutes. And then there was like 10.8 ounces of Tegel, just regular old sugar, at the last 10 minutes, and the WLP 530 yeast. Hmm. And I did a 90-minute boil because I used the Pilsner malt.
Okay.
I hear your recipe, and the first thing I think is I would get rid of the melanoidin malt.
Yeah.
Because that's typically used in place of decoction if you don't want to decoct. And I understand that's a pain in the ass, and not everybody wants to do that.
Kind of a cheat to make like a bock or something.
But the point is it gives you that really full. And Brian, I'm never sure how much melanoidin malt is supposed to attenuate, but it gives you like that sweetness, and that you didn't add a lot to it. But it's typically something you use only in German styles because you use that instead of decoction. And I've never heard of decocting a Belgian beer. I mean, maybe I'm just, you know, a babe in the woods of Belgian beer, but I've never heard of a decoction for a Belgian, especially a Belgian blonde.
No. Yeah, I mean, they add the sugars to get the dryness. You don't want a lot of sweetness in the beer. You don't want that impression of the rich caramely, Maillard byproducts kind of flavors. But yeah, I mean, otherwise, I think the recipe sounded pretty good. I wouldn't go too crazy focusing on that. You know, a little.
Yeah, I cringed when you said 6.8 ounces. I'm like, dude, this guy's measuring 0.8 of an ounce. I would have just rounded up to 7 ounces and just been done with it. You know what I mean? Come on.
What did Jamel used to say? If it was scale that can measure cocaine,
that's right.
Smith, baby.
4.4 ounces, man. That would have been 4.5. I'm not gonna do it.
So tell us about your fermentation. Did you about your yeast starter and you ferment? What do you ferment in? How long did it take? To the extent you can tell us about that, I'd like to hear about your fermentation.
So I did I got a light conical fermenter and I did a WLP 530. I did a 1400 milliliter starter and started at like 68 degrees and let it get up to, look at my notes here, I let it get up to about 72, 73 degrees.
It's not bad. How long?
I had a lot of blow off. I used my Edelmeyer flask and it had quite a bit of yeast blowing out of the bottom of that choker. So I count a lot of that for not finishing down to 110.
How long did your starter go? How many days or hours?
26. So I did the starter on 12/26. So the day after Christmas, and this is a Christmas Eve. I actually brewed this the New Year's Eve. So this is, I brewed it on 12/31. So
it's like a 5-day starter. Okay.
Yeah.
It probably went up and came back down. You know, sometimes it's nice, best to time it so your brew is falling right when that starter hits like the highest croissant and it's just going crazy, and then you pitch it in, that yeast is ready to go and rips at it. What about your mash temperature? What did you do with your mash?
So on this beer, for this recipe, he recommended a 158 mash to give it some body.
That's high.
And then the sugar addition at the end kind of helps dry it out a little bit.
I would pull that back for sure.
Yeah,
what would you put it to?
149 to 151, somewhere in there. Maybe if you want a little more body, if you like the body that's in this, you could go to 152, 153, but just keep it on the lower side.
Do you recirculate your mash, or do you have an infusion mash system?
Jason?
I'm brewing a bag, so it's...
One temperature. Yeah, I'd only ask... I mean, the step mash can maybe give you a little bit of... If you could step mash, I might say maybe mash for 145 for a while, then mash higher. But I think that for brewing a bag, yeah, exactly what Brian says, you want to be centered on like 150. Because that's like right where you're going to have that combination of not destroying all of your sugars, but also chewing up some of the longer chain ones so you have better attenuation.
And then it was bottled off a keg, or what did you, were these bottle conditioned? I didn't really look at the bottom.
So I kegged this on January 27th. So this beer is quite a few months old. And what I did is I bottled probably about a 12-pack I did a few back in May. So those have been in a bottle off a Blinkman beer gun. Bottled like a 12-pack.
Okay. So again, sometimes when you're bottling for competitions and stuff, you need to slightly bump up. The beer gun does a pretty good job slightly bumping up the carbonation in the keg before you do beer for comp, especially if it's on the lower side already. That'll help you get, you know, stay where you need to be. So,
yeah. You know, I, Jason, struggle with this myself. I mean, I've been brewing for 25 plus years and been kegging for 10 plus years. And I've done this a lot. I'm on a podcast. You know, I give advice to people. And I have a hell of a time when I bottle off a keg, even with a beer gun. The beer gun's a good product. I like the beer gun a lot. Even with the beer gun, it never is as carbonated in the bottle as I want it to be. And I struggle with, well, should I add more yeast? Should I add a little bit more sugar? Should I invest in counter pressure stuff? Although I've had friends that have done that, and I've seen the beer spray on the ceiling and all that. And I rent now, so I'm not going to risk doing that stuff. You know, it's tough. And I'm not sure there's a great answer for that out there. And that's just something that you read about, talk to people, you know, kind of experiment with things, see what works for you. But bottling off the keg is a constant source of consternation for everyone. You're not the only one struggling with that.
Absolutely not, dude. I hate doing it.
Yeah.
Get one of your engineers friends to build something that gets you to a perfect carbonation level for every bottle, and then you can become a sponsor of our show. And you know.
And I'm a patent attorney, so call me before you disclose that to anybody, because I can help you out with that.
There you go.
But you're not alone, and this is not a problem that you're suffering with by yourself. This is a very, very common problem in competition. In fact, Brian, I would say if I'm judging a competition, pretty much anything that's not obviously bottle conditioned, 80% are undercarbonated, maybe 90%.
80 to 90, yeah. That's probably a good estimate of the figure there.
It's the thing no one talks about competition, but probably, I don't know, maybe this is not the show to have that discussion, but somebody probably should have that discussion at some point about, you know, what do you do with that? Maybe it's a Brew Strong episode.
But undercarbonation and competition?
Undercarbonation and competition, and how do you get those bottles in competition up to the proper carbonation level when you're bottling off a keg?
So, Jason, any other questions for us before we let you go? How do you feel about all this?
I wasn't sure with this beer, you know, with clones and rest, you know, in competition, should I enter it as a clone, or should I just enter it as it's a Belgian blonde? That's kind of where I have some confusion.
I would think Belgian blonde, right?
I would say probably the 25A.
Yeah. What does comp care about clones, right?
If you build a perfect, you know, left clone that tastes side by side with the left and it's perfect, you know, go ahead and enter that, because the judges are going to be looking for what is going to be the most exact.
But I would I would think to not be able to have those side by side on the competition table, people are going to pull back in their mouth. I've never had a left, right? True. So I don't really know how it tastes.
I still say never enter 34A, period.
Yeah.
Gordon Strong, feel free to revoke my whatever. Don't enter 34A for just that reason, because unless you've got that beer right there side by side to judge against. Like you're saying, you're judging against memory.
Right.
You're judging against a beer you might have had that was in a cooler for 2 years
and
that
personal,
doesn't taste like it's personal preference
right.
Or fresh on your trip to Belgium. Yeah. You know, yeah.
I mean, a clone has to be something that's so universal. Like, I'm cloning Bud Light. I'm cloning Sierra Nevada Pale Ale.
Mm-hmm.
That
but
everyone
even then,
has, and even then, I haven't had a Bud Light in 20 years.
I drink a ton of Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. I couldn't tell you if three beers out of three clone beers, which was closer. I couldn't do it.
Right.
Maybe
and
I could, but I
agree. And you're better off getting judged against a concrete set of standards and the guidelines, yeah, like Belgian Blonde, than judging against somebody's memory and multiple judges' memories of a beer they may never have had.
True. All right, Jason, is that it, or we'll let you go if it is?
Yeah, pretty much. Cool. Yeah, just being a new home brewer, I'm just trying to brew clone beers so I can see how close I can get for my process, you know. So,
hey, that's a great way to learn, man. Yeah, that's a great way to learn not only recipe formulation, but your process. So keep doing it, man.
Maybe you'll be the first clone beer that wins the best of show that we'll see your name in the paper someday.
I know.
Like, he did it, man. You know, I don't know. I've never seen one, but
in the Jackson Weekly or whatever.
Jason, are you going to HomebrewCon in Rhode Island?
Unfortunately, not. It's a long ways away.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Thought we'd ask.
There's too many homebrewers there anyway.
Mm.
All right, man. We'll let you go. Thanks a lot, dude. I appreciate it.
Thank you for sharing.
Thanks, man.
Hey, love the show, guys. Love listening to you guys while I'm traveling down the road.
Oh, awesome. Thanks, man.
Brewing.
Our pleasure.
All right.
Thank you.
Later. Cool. Nice guy.
Yeah.
Okay, we're out of here. I think that's it.
There's no more breaks?
There's no more breaks. We took two breaks.
Okay, I was thinking we need a sign-off thing. Like, we need to have a contest for somebody to come up with the best way that we can sign off the show.
I think the best way we can sign off the show is just ending the show. That's my favorite way. It's just going home. Because that's you not even coming in to do the show. That's
my favorite. My wife is a fan of podcasts, and she listens to one about murders or something. So
watch out, Brian.
You know,
is that
Stay
Norwegian
sexy
guy?
And don't get murdered is like their sign off or something like that.
Okay.
That Norwegian guy who's all like, my good dear friends, and he's the Norwegian accent guy?
Huh. I don't know.
Okay. Keep brewing and send your beer to the doctor.
Yeah.
We'll keep trying stuff.
If you want to be on the show,
email Brian at thebrewingnetwork.com.
That's
Brian
right.
with an I. And when Brian Shar gets his own email address, we'll have to figure out something else.
Well, Brian with an I is the only way to spell it. All good Brians are with an I.
Of course.
Well, and Brian Adams. He gets a pass.
Well, of course.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Thanks a lot for listening to Dr. Homebrew, and we'll see you later.
Cuts like a knife. Oh, yeah.